Anyway, this work that I'm going to show you today relates to a project that we're doing in collaboration with the people at Kentville, where we're trying to look at soft scald and causes of soft scald. And they're primarily interested in Honeycrisp, and we have ambrosia apple in BC, which is also has some susceptibility, not as badly as Honeycrisp, but nonetheless it is susceptible to soft scald. And so we wanted to run a paired kind of an experiment. They were doing some delayed cooling treatments in Kentville, and we wanted to do the same here. Fortunately, in BC, we have an area which is very susceptible. The area itself is very susceptible to soft scald compared to the rest of the growing area. So we decided that's what we would do. We'd go into the orchards and pick two orchards from a susceptible area and use those for doing delayed cooling treatments. And we chose two growers that were actually very close to each other. One of the growers has got a northwest row orientation, less frequent irrigation. How do we know that? Is when we went to visit the orchards were dry all the time that we went. It's planted on an M9 rootstock. The other orchard is an east by northeast row orientation, and had frequent irrigation because when we went to that orchard, it was always muddy. So this being the first year of the study, this is the extent of the characterization we did, okay? That's why I'm being philosophical today. But it's also on an M9 rootstock. So they're not very far from each other. You know, they're less than a mile away from each other. So generally, we expect them to be in a similar kind of microclimate in terms of susceptibility. Ambrosia, I'm not sure how many people know what an ambrosia looks like. This is an ambrosia. They're generally planted on a modified central leader system. They do have a fairly wide range of maturity on the tree, and generally the industry does pick this particular variety at least two picks, sometimes three picks. So more like what they do in New Zealand, as Chris was mentioning earlier today. But it does tell us there can be a little bit of range and maturity of this apple on this tree. This is to show you I actually work in the orchards once in a while. But it also to show you that we have these apples, when they're harvested at the correct maturity, are quite beautiful. They have sort of a yellowish background and a beautiful blush to them. So it is a unique apple, and it's finding a lot of favor in the marketplace. And actually, it's one of the few apples that the growers make decent money at. So any work that we do to reduce problems in this variety is important to the industry. However, we can have soft scald. And some years, it can be quite bad. This is a case where we have severe soft scald with a moderate incidence. And this is the typical ribbon type of scalding we talk about. As could be characteristics of soft scald, and some of the scald develops secondary infections after a while as well. This is another case where we have less severe soft scald, and we have smaller areas being affected, sometimes just small spots on the apple being affected by the soft scald. So it's a little bit less typical than what you might see in some other varieties and other growing areas. But nonetheless, both types of soft scald actually are problematic because you can't sell either piece of fruit. So it's still a challenge for us. Soft scald is the topic that's been discussed, I think discussed almost to death in the post-harvest community. There's some studies that suggest that maturity does have an influence, and perhaps it does. Other studies show that maybe there isn't a relationship all the time. And for us, this is a challenge to try to understand why is there a relationship, why is there not a relationship. There's got to be a reason for that. Things like this just don't happen by happenstance. There's got to be some sort of basis for, physiological basis for this. I'm going to tell you the results first, and I'll show you data. In one orchard, ambrosia was far more susceptible in 2014 to to soft-skulled, and at maturity and not at orchard seemed to correlate with the soft-skulled incidence and severity. In the second orchard, which was less than a mile away, was much, much lower incidence and severity, and there was no relationship at all to maturity. So I think this kind of work illustrates the importance of us trying to segregate when we do this kind of work as to when is there a relationship, when is there not a relationship. Look at the orchards a little bit more carefully, and that's one of the things I'm going to talk about, is what we're planning on doing to help extricate that information from the orchards that we do have. In this grower one, we can see this is we're looking at severity of soft skulled. We can see there's a pretty nice relationship, 0.77 R squared. It's highly significant. And this is the kind of range of maturity sometimes you can see in these orchards, but this also includes apples from different dates. We harvest these apples about four different times that year. So some of that difference in maturity relates to that. In grower two, we have the same range of maturity, and this is the IAD value. I'm not sure if everybody here knows what IAD stands for. Basically, Chris mentioned it earlier. It's got to do with measurement of the DA meter, which measures the chlorophyll in the apple peel. Okay, so as an apple matures, the chlorophyll values drop in the peel, and this meter will tell you how fast that's dropping by the value. So the higher the value, the more chlorophyll is in the peel. So we're starting at 0.4 here, which is for ambrosia. Normally, we would recommend starting harvest at 0.6. So we're below the time that we would start harvesting. And normally, for ambrosia, we're not looking at harvesting after 0.3 on the scale. But nonetheless, in both of these orchards, we have a range of maturity that is within the acceptable range that we've seen in the past for harvest, and some beyond that range. Okay. And the DA meter is subject to a lot of discussion and controversy, so we can talk about it later. But nonetheless, we did see rough correlation with DA values this year with starch clearing values. The reason I don't show the starch clearing values and I show you the DA values this year is because for 2014 is the starch clearing actually was very accelerated last year. And so we had ambrosia showing beyond acceptable harvest values in starch clearing in early September last year, and it was a very anomalous year. However, those apples were still not ready for harvest, so the DA values with ambrosia tend to be more reliable values, at least in British Columbia, for harvest decisions. When we look at the incidence, it's even a better relationship with grower one. The incidence is definitely related to maturity. It's a very nice relationship, but not with grower two. So clearly, it's not every situation where we can count on maturity being an indicator of potential risk for incidence or severity of soft skulled in ambrosia apple. Anyway, I'll reserve my conclusion to ambrosia apple in British Columbia for the time being. So why the differences? Well, as I said before, the IAD values or maturity values or starch clearing values at two sites were a very similar range, so they were not that different from each other in terms of how we would consider them for harvest. Rootstocks were both M9, so they're not different. Age of the trees are roughly the same within a year or so of planting. As I said earlier, susceptible orchard, rows were oriented north-northwest. In the resistant orchard, the rows were oriented east-northeast. I'll talk about that in a minute as to why that might be significant. In the susceptible orchard, we had less irrigation, or the orchard rows were dry, whereas in the resistant orchard, the rows were wet. So that indicates that there are far more irrigation at the times that we went to go visit. Other differences? those are questions, and if anybody has any suggestions to offer today, I'd like to take them back because we have an opportunity to make use of those suggestions and maybe add those to the list of things we're going to be looking at. We know soft scald is a chilling-induced disorder, and we also know that infield stress during growth is considered to render fruit more susceptible. That's as far as we go with that. And there are some models that show heat stress or early season anomalies in temperature can relate to susceptibility in different jurisdictions. Again, there's nothing consistent out there. Question is, how can row orientation affect stress? I have a colleague at our center, Pat Bowen, who's working with grapes, and we share discussions quite a bit about different things that are going on, and they're doing some work where they're finding that sun exposure and the orientation of the rows and the grape vines can have a tremendous effect on fruit quality and susceptibility to sun-induced injury on the grape berries themselves. And the main issue as far as they're concerned in grapes is that sun exposure in the heat of the day is far more of an issue than sun exposure in the cool of the day, which would be the morning. So the combination of the hot day and sun exposure could be sufficient to cause injury, whether it leads to sun scald or it's an injury that's invisible, dependent on the situation. If this is true, then the orientation in grower one is probably going to lead us to more afternoon exposure of the fruit to the sun. And maybe that's associated with that. Now, that's just a hypothesis, one hypothesis amongst many. How can irrigation affect stress? Well, where we live is desert, just like Wenatchee is pretty much desert. We have to irrigate, otherwise we don't get a crop. And so we have very little rain in the summer, except for this year, unfortunately. But so a crop that's irrigated frequently is going to be, such as the rows or muddy, is going to have greater water availability and more transpiration, cooling potential for the tree and the fruit. If the orchard it doesn't receive a significant amount or a similar amount of irrigation, then they're not going to have that evaporative cooling, and so that could lead to higher surface temperatures on the fruit. It's possible, but all we know, despite all these hypotheses I've thrown out, all we know is that we have a field lab now. So we know we have two orchards that are contrasting in their susceptibility. So we're out there making intensive measurements of orchard temperatures, and we're also have infrared sensors to actually make surface temperature measurements on the fruit. We should be monitoring irrigation and hopefully we'll get into measuring transpiration rates in the orchards. And another thing we want to do is we never harvest the fruit from different orientations on the tree. We're going to have to start harvesting the fruit from different orientations on the tree. If sun exposure is important, then the orientation of the fruit on the tree is going to play an important role in this. So we need to start dissecting even the tree, I think, to try to understand if where this susceptibility is coming from. This was a project that was funded by ABACE. It's part of the project that June Song is going to be talking about tomorrow. He's doing some more intense molecular and proteomic analysis. Data was collected by Changwen Liu and a very bright student, Jared Stuchnoff, who's gone into graduate school, by the way. So I feel proud that we could lead him on to grad school, but he did a wonderful job helping us get this information this year and helping us isolate some of these issues. And we had help from the BC Tree Fruits Co-op in finding these orchards. Thank you. Time for one question. Chris.
Is that me?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts in doing some field application, for example, putting shade, cloth,
We can. These two orchardists are very happy to have us in there. Apparently, people haven't gone to see them before, so No, they're very eager to have us out there, so I'm sure we could be applying these kind of things and they'd be happy for us to do it. And actually, anecdotally, there's been a few orchards that shared with us that they do have orchards across from them that have high susceptibility, and they don't have high susceptibility, so this isn't uncommon. So there are things going on that we can take advantage of if we listen to the industry. Thank you.